Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, May 28th, 2025. Hope you're having a great day so far. Let's start on the front page, where there's pictures of happy graduates from Central and Centennial High School. A salute to the class of 2025. Some happy kids there in the picture. And then at the very top of the front page, an article about from the Champaign School Board, Boozer Era Likely at an End, by Jeff D'Alessio. Agenda of special Thursday meeting includes her separation agreement, appointment of temporary successor. Less than a month after five of its seven members were sworn in, the new-look Champaign School Board will vote this week to cut ties with fourth-year superintendent Sheila Boozer. A special meeting has been called for 5:30 p.m. Thursday, at which time the board will vote on two items according to the light agenda released Tuesday. The first item calls for approval of a negotiated separation agreement with Boozer and terminates her contract a full year before it was due to expire. The move would take effect immediately. The second appoints her successor on an acting basis, Dan Casillas, Unit 4's Executive Director of Facilities and Services, until an interim superintendent can be found. The news comes 2 weeks after the board approved issuing a request for proposals for firms wishing to assist in the search for Boozer's successor, who would start on July 1st of 2026. That's still the board's plan. According to the timeline, the board hopes to know who will fill Boozer's seat on a permanent basis by January, at which point the selected candidate begins working with current superintendent to ensure an orderly transition, well ahead of the summer start date. The previous board's lack of action to extend Boozer's contract before the end of this school year triggered a clause that allowed the new board to terminate her contract without cause any time after May 1st of 2025. That it happened so soon after the new members were seated comes as no surprise to those who followed the results of the April 1st election. Three Boozer supporters, past president Giannina Baker, Bruce Brown, and Heather Vasquez, opted not to run for re-election. Among those taking their seats were new president Tony Bruno and Christy Arnold, who both expressed a strong desire throughout their campaigns to make a change at the top if elected. One public comment session will be held prior to the board's vote on Thursday. The superintendent's supporters turned out in droves for the board's last regular meeting, with a long line of speakers chastising members for not backing Boozer. Details of the settlement were not made public Tuesday. If her salary remained the same as in year four, Boozer would have made $241,348 next school year, Also on the front page, an article by Jim Rosso from Champaign, Rockies versus Cubs. Everyone on the bus. Tanner Gordon travel party headed to Chicago. Fresh off his first major league win, Champaign's Tanner Gordon will have more than 115 family friends and friends of friends on hand for his next scheduled start today at Wrigley Field. Two Peoria charter buses will take the travel party from Champaign to Chicago today as Gordon and the Rockies take on the Cubs at 7:05 p.m. "The support is overwhelming," said Bob Gordon, Tanner's dad. "It's kind of blossomed. From when we started planning, things snowballed." Tanner beat the Yankees for win number one on Friday as his parents and dozens of others watched on TV from the garage of the Gordon's Champaign home. Afterward, they called to congratulate him and wound up celebrating until 2 a.m. "We were fired up," Bob said. "We're so proud of him. For him to get his first win, especially against a club like the Yankees, it was awesome." Tanner, a former News Gazette All-Area performer at Champaign Central, is 1-1 with a 4.38 ERA this season for the team, with the worst record in baseball. Tanner's biggest fans will mostly be seated in Section 228 at Wrigley Field. Bob will be easy to spot, wearing the same clothes he had on Friday night, down to the number 29 jersey and purple socks. They're all going to Chicago, he said. I don't want to break the mojo. And there's a photo at the bottom of the article of Bob and Jody Gordon talking to their son, Tanner Gordon, after his first Major League win on Friday night. And going to A7, under Our Communities, Bob Asmussen has a very large article with a picture of some orange-clad Illini fans, and the heading is, Illinois Superfans Sample Every Sport in 1 Year. At the top of a page is a picture of Duncan Cody and his son, 8-year-old, at Yankee Ridge, and I'll start the article. Let me tell you the tale of Duncan Cody's most excellent adventure. The Urbana 8-year-old is finishing 3rd grade at Yankee Ridge Elementary. His school year included games, meets, and tournaments involving the University of Illinois Athletics. Josh Whitman's program offers a combined 21 sports for men and women, and Duncan went to see them all. Accompanied by his willing assistant slash grandfather, John, who Duncan calls Papa. They attended at least one event for each team. Duncan's grandmother, Kathy, a.k.a. Mimi, often went with them. Honestly, sounds like a dream for grandparents and a year Duncan will always remember. John and Kathy are U of I alums and longtime season ticket holders in football and men's basketball. Currently living in Taylorville, where John is a retired judge, they happily made the many trips back to their college town. John, a 1970 Taylorville High School graduate, earned his Illinois undergrad degree in 1974, then went on to Ohio State University for law school during Archie Griffin's Heisman Trophy years. Good timing, though, he makes it clear, he did not root for the Buckeyes. My blood runs orange and blue, John said. The 21-event tour started September 7th, with Illinois football hosting and defeating number 19-ranked Kansas at Memorial Stadium. It was the first of the 9-ranked Illinois opponents that Cody saw, including a pair of number 1 teams. Illinois men's basketball hosted number 1 Tennessee on December 14th, and Mike Poeta's wrestling team met number 1 Penn State on February 16th. The Codys did see a national champion with Penn State rolling to its 4th consecutive wrestling title at the NCAA meet in Philadelphia, as well as plenty of Illinois success, including the men's golf team tying Oklahoma State for first in NCAA regional at Atkins Golf Club, which was their last event. This is the origin story. Duncan is one of Darcy and Craig's 6 kids, and the second of the youngest. Craig is a minister at Christ Community Church. What did Darcy and Craig think of the idea? It's a really sweet thing, Craig said. I think it's a fun thing for a young guy to do with his grandpa. It's something they're never going to forget. My wife and I were all in favor. Traveling is not a new experience for the Cody family. Before moving back to Illinois, Craig and Darcy were missionaries in China for about a decade. Duncan's older siblings were all born in China. Duncan's next adventure might be his first trip to China. We would love that, Craig said. I think we'll get there someday. Craig and Darcy are both U of I alums, like Craig's parents. Their oldest, Hudson, is currently attending the U of I, and second child and recent Urbana High School grad, Grace, is on the way in the fall. In the works, John Cody had been kicking around the idea of an all-encompassing sports season for a couple of years. I really do enjoy Illinois sports, and I thought it would be a fun experience, John said. John is recently a member of the U of I Athletic Board, serving from 2021 until his term ended on May 8th. The Athletic Board is more than about the 3 major sports. It's about 21, John said. He told his family this was the year to see them all and asked if anyone wanted to join him. Duncan's mom encouraged him to give it a try. We saw it as a quest, John said. From the start, we said it was to do grandfather and grandson relational activities. It would have been something John might have liked to try one with his own kids when they were growing up, but It is 79 miles from their home in Taylorville to the U of I campus. Fine for a Saturday football game, but a bit tougher to make during the week. "We were all about the Illini sports," John said. "All my kids, by the time they were 5, knew all the words to all the Illini songs. Now it's the grandkids' turn. Duncan is in an age where he appreciates watching sports and hanging out with his grandparents. John and Kathy started the planning for last summer. For sports like basketball and baseball, there were numerous scheduling options. But there weren't many in-season events for men's and women's golf and track and field. So they went to West Lafayette, Indiana, to watch the women's golf team compete. It turned out to be a great thing," John said. They finished the tour at the NCAA Men's Golf Regional, hosted by Adkins Golf Club. Very convenient. To check the indoor track box, the Codys went to the Big Ten meet at Fall Creek Pavilion in Indianapolis. At an outdoor track meet held in Dermergian Park, the public address announcer asked for all elementary school children to run a special 100-meter dash. "Duncan was so excited about that," John said. "Duncan finished second," the proud papa said. The race made an impression on Duncan. Another lifetime memory with the crowd cheering the runners as they crossed the finish line. "You're not really thinking about it," Duncan said. "You're really just running as fast as you can." Track runs in his family. His older siblings participated in the sport. What was Duncan's favorite sport? "Men's gymnastics," Duncan said. All the events were going on at once. If you didn't like one, you could watch another. Good call by the aspiring teacher. A few other special moments stand out. During a women's golf tournament at Purdue, Illinois senior Lexana Halama stopped to chat with the Codys. At men's tennis, Kenta Miyoshi, a member of the U of I athletic board, took pictures with Duncan and John. Lifelong Illinois fans John and Kathy made sure to include all the grandkids whenever possible. 4 went to Milwaukee this year for the first 2 rounds of the NCAA men's basketball tournament to watch Illinois. "We make an effort," John said. "My relationship with my grandkids, like so many grandparents, is really important to me. I look actively for ways to strengthen the relationships. When this idea occurred to me, I thought it had the potential to be a good thing. It has exceeded all expectations." Duncan agreed. "It was very exciting," he said. "I would highly recommend it to other people, too." Cute picture of a smiling granddad and his grandson. Let's turn now to an opinion piece by J. Mark Powell with his Holy Cow History. And today is a quiz here in J. Mark Powell's article. So get your pens or pencils out and see if you can answer these post-Memorial Day quiz, The Last Full Measure. J. Mark Powell says, "Memorial Day is when we pause and honor those who gave their lives for our freedom. Some were famous men who died in battle. Others were unknown soldiers killed in historic battles. How much do you know about America's military history? Test your knowledge with this short quiz." So I'm going to read the questions first, and then we will get to the answer. So number 1, which single day battle had the most American combat deaths? I'll give you the answers with A, B, C, or D. Okay, so here are the possible answers. A, Battle of the Bulge. B, Gettysburg. C, Bunker Hill. Or D, Antietam. I think I'm going to read you the answers right now so that we can keep a good continuity flowing. All right, so the answer to number 1 is D. The deadliest single-day battle in American history was the Civil War's Battle of Antietam, with 23,000 casualties, including 3,675 Union and Confederate soldiers killed. Number 2. This ill-fated military action during America's Cold War with international communism claimed 4 American lives and nearly undermined a new president. A. The Gulf of Tonkin. B. The Bay of Pigs. C. The Berlin Airlift. Or D. The London Blitz. Answer? B. 4 American CIA operatives died during the failed 1961 attempt by U.S.-backed Cuban exiles to overthrow Fidel Castro. They were pilots from the Alabama Air National Guard who flew B-26 bombers in support of the invasion. Number 3. This famous American died at the Alamo during the Texas Revolution, but he never fired a shot. A. Davy Crockett. B. William Travis. C. James Bowie. D. Daniel Boone. Answer? C. When Mexican General Santa Anna's forces took the Alamo in 1836, they killed nearly every combatant, including the bedridden Bowie, namesake of the Bowie knife. He was sick, possibly with typhoid or tuberculosis, for the entire siege. Number 4. The Spanish-American War is remembered as the Splendid Little War. What battle saw the largest number of American deaths in that war? A. Manila Bay. B. Santiago de Cuba. C. San Juan Hill. Or D. Explosion of the USS Maine. Answer? C. Colonel Theodore Roosevelt is famous for leading his Rough Riders in a charge up San Juan Hill in Cuba on July 1st of 1898. And he did, although the fighting was actually on Kettle Hill and the Rough Riders walked, their horses hadn't arrived. Still, the 144 soldiers who died there made it the war's costliest battle for the Americans. Number 5. What is the highest political office held by an American who was killed in combat? A. Governor. B. U.S. Senator. C. Vice President. Or D. Member of Congress. The answer is B. President Abraham Lincoln came under fire, though at a distance while in office. But the highest-ranking city official to die in combat was the U.S. Senator Edward Baker, a Republican from Oregon, during the Civil War's Battle of Ball's Bluff in 1861. Number 6. World War II was the deadliest struggle in human history. On what battlefield did more Americans lay down their lives than in any other in that conflict? A. Pearl Harbor. B. D-Day invasion at Normandy. C. Iwo Jima. Or D. Battle of the Bulge. The answer? D. Just when it seemed victory in Europe was in sight, the Germans launched a lethal counteroffensive. Americans paid dearly in the December 1944, January 1945 Battle of the Bulge, halting the attack at the cost of 19,000 lives. Number 7. Many famous U.S. entertainers served in the armed forces during World War II, and some made the ultimate sacrifice. Among them was this famous musician. A. Glenn Miller. B. Tony Bennett. C. B.B. King. Or D. John Coltrane. The answer? A. Number 7A. All 4 of these musicians served in the military during World War II, but only Glenn Miller didn't make it home. His flight from England to Paris disappeared over the English Channel in 1944, and he was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star. Well, there you have it, a quiz about to honor Memorial Day from J. Mark Powell, and let's move on. And an article under our communities from Danville, a life remembered, Bob Iverson. Late alderman was a friend looking out for Danville, by Jennifer Bailey. Danville City Council Ward 7 alderman Bob Iverson often was on double duty. At city council meetings, he was well-versed on the packet of agenda items to take action as an alderman, but he also often set up his radio recording device, too, in the media section of the city council chamber's audience area to record the meeting action. Fellow aldermen and others in the community say he will be missed as a hands-on alderman and friend to many. Iverson, 74, died Thursday at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. He was one of the original aldermen who served when the city government changed to mayor alderman in 1987. He first served until 1993 and started serving again as an alderman in 2019 in Ward 7. Iverson was most recently reelected as alderman in 2023, with his term to expire in 2027. He also previously served as vice mayor. He was news reporter for WITY Radio and was a former newspaper reporter and telecommunications coordinator for the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center at the University of Illinois. Iverson said communication was his life's work, and as an alderman, he felt that there were ways to make city government more transparent and appreciated. He also brought a company that he worked with through the U of I to the First Presbyterian Church to develop a sustainability report. First Presbyterian was the first in the state to win an Illinois Sustainability Award due to energy improvement and environmental efforts of the church. "I feel a great loss to our community," said Ward 5 Alderwoman and Vice Mayor Eve Ludwig. Ludwig worked with Iverson on city ordinances and different items through being on the council together. "Bob was always a giver," Ludwig said, adding that he'd give his time and energy to work with the city even when he wasn't well. "He'd keep working hard for the citizens and in the community. He was just relentless. He just wanted to keep pushing through. He just worked so hard for this community, and he didn't want to give up." Ludwig said Iverson was also a really good listener and wanted to fully hear all sides of an issue. "Everyone on the council respected him, and it's going to be hard to move on without him," she added. "He was a good friend," she said. Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said, "The thing I appreciated about Bob the most, though, was that he was a man who you could reason with and who wanted to get an understanding. He was an incredibly rational person, an incredibly kind person, and he was someone who did everything that he could for anybody. He was someone who was always ready to help, a person that I counted on for advice, especially in tough situations, and he was a dear friend who is going to be sorely missed." Iverson survivors include his wife, Judith Iverson, daughters Amy Iverson and Anne Jason Bennett, and one grandson, Keaton Bennett, all of Danville. And there will be a Celebration of Life memorial service at the First Presbyterian Church in Danville. Also in communities from the University of Illinois, Research Park Considering Apartment Project by Jana Wiersema. Survey underway will help determine most of the details. The University of Illinois Research Park, currently home to both businesses and university facilities, is looking to add something new to its landscape, apartments. "Housing is essential, we think, for the Research Park as it looks to continue to serve its constituents and the community," said U of I Research Park Director of External Engagement Laura Bleal. She told the News Gazette that the Research Park is in conversations with a potential development partner, but the two parties have not signed a terms sheet yet. Land north and east of Carl Orthopedics and Sports Medicine is being considered as a potential project site. When asked what led to this project, Bleal said that housing has long been in the sights of the Research Park and was identified as a priority in its 2018 master plan. According to Research Park officials, the housing project is being designed for staff at the U of I, within the Research Park and at Carl, as well as graduate students. "That's sort of identified as the demographic we think would be interested in it," Bleal said. However, she indicated that the project isn't necessarily exclusive to these groups. She added that the Research Park has heard from working professionals that many of the current rental options are located on the outskirts of town. "This is a unique opportunity to be very central," Bleal said. Unable to estimate how soon construction might begin. At present, the potential partner has requested that the research park conduct a community survey on the project, and Bleel said the results may directly influence the details of the term sheet. When asked how much the apartments might rent at, she replied that it's way too early to say. And frankly, why they're doing the survey, too, is to get a sense of the market out there, she said. And in an Urbana police report by Luke Taylor, Urbana man is charged for allegedly flashing a firearm at another driver. An Urbana man has been charged with aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon after allegedly displaying a firearm when another driver honked at him on the road. Tavion M. Bishop, 25, was arrested Saturday after the alleged crime occurred on Friday. Assistant State's Attorney Brooke Hinman said that at around 11:05 a.m. Friday, Bishop stopped at the intersection of North Cunningham Avenue and Airport Road in Urbana. When the light turned green, Bishop's car did not start, and the driver of the car behind him honked their horn, Hinman said. Bishop allegedly began yelling at that driver and flashed a black pistol at him. Urbana police were given a description of a subject they now believe to be Bishop, the vehicle he was driving, and a partial license plate number, and were able to use automated license plate readers in the area to help them identify Bishop as a suspect. When officers made the contact, Bishop said he had been driving in that area that day, but denied having a firearm with him, Hinman said. Police then executed a search warrant on Bishop's home and spoke to another occupant who described a gun he owned and where it would be located. Officers found that gun, then found an unloaded Glock 45 caliber firearm in a ventilation duct, Hinman said. The other occupant denied possessing that gun or ever hiding a firearm in the duct, but indicated that he knew Bishop owned a firearm and that he usually kept it in his car. Police then executed a warrant on Bishop's car, and in the glove box found a loaded magazine matching the .45 caliber weapon. Bishop does not have an active firearm license. While unlawful possession of a weapon is not usually a detainable offense, Hinman said that the state was requesting pretrial detention due to the circumstances of Bishop allegedly waving it at the driver. A hearing on that matter will be held on Hill today, and Bishop will remain in jail overnight until the decision is made. If convicted of the Class 4 felony, he faces 1 to 6 years in prison, the possible sentence extended due to his prior criminal record. And we have just about enough time for another opinion piece by Jim Dye, with the heading, Blanket of Budget Gloom Has Enveloped the General Assembly. Shaping up as a tough week for spend-happy Illinois legislators who face a Saturday deadline to pass a budget for the new fiscal year beginning July 1st. The problem? It's always about money. There's never enough to meet all the legislators' spending desires. Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed a $55 billion-plus budget earlier this year that he said balanced spending with estimated revenues. Now those revenues have fallen short of projections by roughly $450 million to $550 million. The exact number depends on whose estimates one accepts, either the Governor's Office of Management and Budget or the state's Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. It remains to be seen if the deadline prompts Pritzker to modify or reverse his opposition to general tax increases to boost revenues. But he's getting plenty of pushback in that direction from some legislators and liberal groups. Early this month, a coalition of groups calling itself the Revenue Alliance proposed a $6 billion in tax increases. It suggested raising estate taxes and corporate income taxes, imposing new excise taxes on capital gains, as well as a new wealth tax that would require voters to approve a progressive income tax amendment to the Illinois Constitution. The Revenue Alliance called for the new money to be spent on immigrant services, schools, housing, and cash grants to lower income earners. The plan was not well received, but attitudes may be changing in light on the projected shortfall. Further complicating the situation are proposed changes in Medicaid funding at the federal level that could raise costs for Illinois, where an incredible 1 in 4 residents is on the program. That's 3.4 million people. Another big issue, one that may have escaped downstaters' attention, is the woeful condition of Northern Illinois transportation agencies that come under the umbrella of the Regional Transportation Agency. Leaders of the CTA, the Metra, and PACE are seeking $1.5 billion in new funding to overhaul what is widely considered to be a dysfunctional system. Legislators have been amenable to helping, but they want to see progress at the reorganization front before burying the RTA under new money. All things considered, the situation is grim. Time for a short break. I'll return with the second half of the News Gazette. See you in a minute.